We are live this evening at the KWOJ 102.5 studio in San Angelo, Texas, and we're happy you've decided to tune in. This station is a work of the Ninth and Main Church of Christ. Our format this evening is going to be a little different from usual. We're going to be interviewing Jess Simpson from the Wyoming Christian Student Center in Laramie, Wyoming. He's the director of that good work, and the Ninth and Main Church of Christ contributes financially to them. Before we actually get into our study, let's have a word of prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for blessing us with another day to serve you and to do your will. Thank you for your son Jesus, who willingly gave himself so that we could be with you in eternity. We're grateful for the success that the Wyoming Christian Student Center is having in bringing the lost to Christ, and we pray that you continue to bless their work. We also ask that we as your people and your servants will mimic their love and concern for souls. May everything said and done here tonight be true to your word and rightly divided. We ask this prayer in the name of Jesus. Amen. Amen. Jess, it's great to have you.
Hey, thanks, Stephen, for having me.
Absolutely. I understand over the past few days, y'all have driven about 4,000 miles.
Is that what they said?
No. Is that not true?
I don't know if it's been 4,000 miles, but it's
okay.
Been...
I think 3,500 was the specific number that they gave.
3,500 is pretty close, yeah. This is
wow.
A big state.
Yeah, absolutely. So how many different stops have you made?
Oh, geez. Well, this is probably... town number 5 or 6, I think, in Texas that we've spent a day or two at.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's a long trip.
Yeah.
And you're going to all of these different places to talk about the work in Laramie.
That's right. There are a lot of our brethren in Texas have been with this particular work for many, many decades. And so we always like to kind of tour the state and let them know what's going on, because a lot of them just aren't able to come see the work in person.
Okay. Sweet. So I will go ahead and mention something. Before we started, we were having some technical difficulties. Those have been remedied, and so if you want to turn on, you can also listen via the internet. So that has been updated. Something else I'll let you know is that if you do have comments or questions that you would like for us to address live, we can also do that. The phone number is the same as always. Just text us at 325-284-8182. That is 325-284-8182. We'll be looking for those texts. So if you have any questions about the work in Laramie, we will try and address those via the radio. So back to our conversation, Jess. I'm sorry. So 5 or 6 stops all in the state of Texas, or just between here and Laramie?
All in Texas. You know, we have different congregations that work with us actually throughout the country, primarily in the Rocky Mountain region, and I try to travel to them, you know, throughout the year, but Texas is a long, long haul for us, so I yeah. take one chunk and I try to hit everybody around the same time.
Well, every Texan listening to this is beaming with pride right now. It's one of our favorite things about the state, I suppose, is its size. So so give us a general background and history of the Student Center, of the work that you do.
Yeah, so it used to be called the Bible Chair.
Okay.
At the University of Wyoming. We sort of call it the Christian Student Center now. Back in the late 1950s, a gentleman by the name of James O. Tucker saw a need for the church to reach out to the lost going through the University of Wyoming, which was then and right now is our only university in the entire state. And so he went around to different congregations of the state saying, we need to get some sort of facility set up to where we can minister to these non-Christians going through college here. They were able to acquire a building as close to being on campus as you possibly can get. It's right across from the student library.
Wow.
And ever since then, we've had different directors. It sort of started out as a way to teach accredited religion classes for the university. But the elderships kind of wanted to get away from that, because once you're too tied to a secular university, they actually have some say over what goes on. And so we've detached ourselves. We're not accredited. Now it functions as a hub for evangelism and sort of equipping young Christian men and women who come while they're going to school here.
Okay. Awesome. Along that same line that you were just mentioning, you know, I think you would agree that universities are very inherently focused on the physical. You know, it's about what career can I get, you know, after I graduate, what salary can I make, what can mm-hmm. I learn in this life. It's very worldly focused, I guess you could say.
Yes.
Not necessarily, of course, in a bad way, but What does the student center specifically do to try and appeal to people in that very physically focused environment?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. And it's sort of a double-edged sword. In one aspect, being at a university, everything is catered toward about as non-Christian of an outlook as you could possibly think of. But on the other hand, is when you're so focused on doing well in class and pursuing your career and figuring out where your life wants to go, that also induces high levels of stress and anxiety, or sometimes feelings of hopelessness and not knowing what my purpose in life is and feeling lost and feeling alone. So in spite of that, students begin to realize they have these other needs in addition to these worldly goals that they want to pursue. And so, sure, you know, some people come to the student center because, hey, I want to study the Bible. This building says Christian Student Center. That's kind of the exception. We find a lot of people who are just feeling lost and alone without really a sense of direction. They want to know something more. And so whether it's through our classes, and I think more primarily through our actual students, showing them Christ in their lives, they start to see, wow, there's something attractive about this. And pretty soon they start asking bigger questions, and the Bible studies sort of take it from there.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's Titus 2. You know, that's adorning the gospel, you know, mm-hmm. making it look attractive to people who are on the outside. And that's of course, so important. Something else that, you know, I thought of while you were talking is that many times, you know, you hear these horror stories of kids growing up in the church, you mm-hmm. know, they've always gone to every service, and then as soon as they get away from mom and dad and they're out in college, then they fall away.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that there's actually also another piece of that that seems to drive people to religion, mm-hmm. maybe if they've been on the outside looking in for most of their lives.
It's a weird thing, and every year, I don't know why it surprises me, it shouldn't, but I know all of these young Christians are graduating high school and they're coming to the university, and I'm thinking, all right, we're going to get to work with this young man or woman. We don't see them ever. But most of our students, they don't come from religious homes, or they come from a home that came from a non-Christian religion, and they're the ones who are seeking. And it's just sort of an interesting dynamic. Of course, there are those, you know, who grew up faithful and they stayed faithful. Yeah. But it's very interesting to see some of the things maybe you wouldn't always expect.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another point, specifically in evangelism, I think sometimes I can forget is, you know, we can't evaluate the soil before we sow the seed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sower, he went forth to sow, and mm-hmm. he just sowed. I mean, he didn't look at whether it was stony or whether it was, you know, there were thorns. He just sowed, and he let what would grow, grow. So, mm-hmm. yeah, sometimes, you know, the people we would least expect are the very ones who are looking. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's very encouraging.
So what is your background with the Student Center?
Yeah, so that's a long story. Let me give you the abbreviated version. In 2009, my future wife was getting ready to graduate. She had invited me to come to a Bible study. I was really more interested in her, but I said, yeah, no, I'll go to this Bible study. And for the first time, I had heard the Bible explained in a way that made sense. I'm like, okay, I can understand this thing. This is really interesting. I'm getting a lot out of this. She graduated. She moves on. And I keep coming to the Student Center. And the gentleman who was the director at that time was Brian Lombardi. I asked him, you know, I know you're busy. Would you be interested in doing a Bible study with me? And he said, oh, yeah, I think we can do something like that.
Yeah, that's every preacher's dream, to have someone come to you. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was, of course, he was excited. We studied for a little while. He converted me in September. A few months after that, I decided, you know what, I want to start sharing the gospel. And so I started studying with my friends and doing a terrible job at it, but I was zealous, you know?
Yeah.
And so he said, well, let's take an opportunity and kind of train you to help you grow in this aspect. And so he allowed me to serve as an intern, learning how to preach and teach a little bit. And then I go through the Student Center. Some of my family was converted shortly after that, my brother. sister-in-law, cousin, his wife, and then my mom shortly after that. Then sort of coming full circle, Brian had been director for almost 13 years, and he was getting ready to step out of that role, and we had been in touch, and so he asked me if I would like to come work alongside him as he stepped into the pulpit more in the Laramie congregation, and I would sort of step into his shoes. And so it sort of just kind of came full circle, which was really a neat thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, another question that kind of came to mind while you were talking is, it sounds like you were in that situation that you were just talking about. You know, you weren't necessarily raised in the home that emphasized Christian teaching. But suddenly you come into contact with the gospel, and your first inclination is, okay, I've got to start sharing this with people. Where do you think the disconnect is between people who grow up in the church and being apathetic towards evangelism and someone who finds the truth and it's something that they're passionate about, something they're excited about? Where do you think that disconnect is?
That is something I have to figure out every day. It is such a frustrating phenomenon. And you'll find it with people who didn't grow up, obviously, in a Christian home, and they're baptized, but it doesn't really seem to stick. But you can always tell with the people who just get it. I mean, once you make the connection between, man, I needed my salvation, well, that guy over there needs it too, but he doesn't know, I better go tell him.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll talk. I got a couple of students with me here tonight. We'll talk about your fiance. She's kind of one of those. What frustrates me is I'm trying to figure out, as someone who didn't grow up in a Christian home, where the apathy comes from. And I guess this is something that all congregations are talking about. Why are we losing our youth? And, you know, maybe some of it, at least from those that I've seen, is a lot of them were not converted. You know, they were baptized at such and such age, and they went through all of the things that you're supposed to do, but it was more like a rite of passage as part of my family. And so what we're trying to do, and what I'm actually finding, is a lot of the people who grew up in Christian homes and were baptized at Bible camp or whatever, those are the people I need to convert. And unfortunately, that's the case, but we do get to see some really cool things happening because of that. And I'm sure it's the same in every congregation.
Yeah. Yeah. Another question I would ask is, you know, you started from the ground. I mean, you didn't have that teaching necessarily growing up. And so a common question I would think in evangelism is that people ask, okay, well, I've become a Christian now. Where do I start? Or maybe I've been a Christian, you know, and I've been apathetic. Evangelism is something I've always, you know, said, well, that's the preacher's job. That's something he's responsible for. You know, I'm just going to essentially do what I need to do.
Yeah.
Which of course we know is the wrong attitude, but you know, for a person to come to that realization and say, you know what, I need to start being evangelistic. I need to start helping people come to the gospel. And they were to ask that question, you know, where do I start? What would you say to someone who wants to be more evangelistic, but they're nervous, they're not confident, maybe it's outside of what they feel like their talents are, I guess you could say.
Oh, for sure. And I don't even know if I could count on one hand someone who says, oh, I'm not nervous about it at all. And it just comes naturally. Most of the time, I don't know if it's 99% of people I know in the church, but we're all nervous. I do this. I'm supposed to do it every single day. This is what I do. It's my role in the church. I'm terrified. I'm nervous. I'm worried about saying the right thing. And so you're not alone, for one. Everybody feels this way. And, you know, we all basically have some of the same thoughts in our mind. What if they ask me a question I don't know the answer to? What if I'm not good enough? What if I do a poor job and push them away from Christ? There's no way I could memorize all of these verses that I saw that Christian, you know, memorize. And so there's all these different things. Part of the problem is, I think maybe we have this idea of what evangelism is, and it's a very specific idea, and we forget that there's a lot more to it than that. A lot of times when we think of evangelism, we think, okay, here's someone who really, really, really has a lot of scripture memorized. They can explain it on a very deep level. And so they sit down and you ask a question about Revelation 20 and they're able to give you the answer. Well, yes, that's evangelism, but there's so much more to evangelism. And so every Christian in all aspects of life is to be an evangelist, as someone who shares the good news and shines their light and is telling people about Christ. But there are more ways to do that as well. But, boy, wouldn't it be nice if more and more Christians were sitting down and inviting their neighbor over to do a personal Bible study. And I really think that that's very, very possible. I know that so many more could do it, but our fears are holding us back. Mm-hmm. And I make excuses. I know how it goes. Really, if you want to be able to do something, I believe most people, if you put in the effort, you can do it. And so it kind of comes down to, do I really want to do it, or do I like the idea of doing it? If you really want something, it's going to take work, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Just like anything worthwhile, it's going to take work, it's going to take time, it's going to take trial and error, but you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to decide, okay, and maybe we'll talk more about like how to get Bible studies later. But you have to decide, okay, what do people really need to know? I'm not going to know everything in the Bible, but what do my non-Christian friends really need to know to become a Christian, for example? Well, they got to understand, you know, sin and how that affects me. They have to understand that, you know, I can't earn my way to heaven. That's not going to work. They have to understand judgment. They have to understand, why would God become flesh and die? Why did he have to do it that way? That seems so counterintuitive if I were to make up a religion. You know, they'll have to understand, you know, Jesus would tell people, if you want to be my disciple, you have to hate your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, son or daughter, even your own life. You have to carry your cross. You have to give up everything. So they need to know up front, what's it going to cost me? Because it's not going to cost you money necessarily, but it's going to cost you something in your life. What does he require now that he's given that death? So there's not a ton of things people have to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you realize that, you say, okay, I know those things. I've grown up hearing about those things. Then you say, okay, what are some passages that teach that? And you start studying them for yourselves. And with anything, you work with it enough, you can memorize it, or you can write it down. You can kind of keep it handy. And you do it a few times, and the students know, I've worked with them, those that want to learn how to do this. If you just keep doing it enough, you memorize it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a student at the student center, I knew nothing about evangelism. I studied with a few people, and after that, you don't have to use notes.
Yeah.
And there are little tricks that I show people to make it a little bit easier if they really struggle with memory issues.
Yeah, and, you know, I think another point that we could make is that there's no cookie-cutter way of evangelism. You know, it's not, you know, walking up to someone I've never met and I'm now going to teach you the gospel. You know, it can be a coworker, and, you know, I mention a scripture in passing one day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over time, I'm helping that person become more spiritual in their thinking. And that's when I sit down, you know, mm-hmm. and that's when I try to lead them to the extent of my knowledge, and then if I don't know any more, then I can bring them to someone who does know. So it's not necessarily, this is evangelism and it fits this mold perfectly, and if I don't fit that mold perfectly, then I'm not doing it right.
Yeah.
It's, I know the truth, and I'm going to help this person over time.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, there may be instances like you with it's where it's just they come and they're ready, and you know, I want to study the Bible right now sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's something I think we have to be able to pivot with, not necessarily something that we can be rigid.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of Christians, I think, incorrectly feel very guilty that I'm not doing what I see that Christian doing. And maybe legitimately, that isn't what they're supposed to be doing, because we are different in the body. We're not all the exact same function. But one of the really encouraging things I think about, like if you were to read John chapter 1, and we see that, well, the only reason Peter comes to meet Jesus is because Andrew. All Andrew does is say, hey, come and see.
Mm-hmm.
And then Philip goes and gets Nathaniel. Hey, just come and see. And that's evangelism as well. That is just as important. It's so multifaceted.
Yeah. So just give us an overview of what the Student Center is all about. You know, we've kind of hit talked about it coming and going, but specifically, mm-hmm. you know, what would you say you're trying to accomplish?
Right. So, I'll just read a verse. Actually, from Colossians chapter 1, let me turn over here. This is sort of a verse that we like to use to think about what our mission really is for what we're trying to accomplish at the Student Center. And so it's Colossians 1:28. It says, "We proclaim him, admonishing every man and teaching every man with all wisdom, so that we may present every man complete in Christ." And so if we were to really summarize what the Student Center is about, what the Laramie Church and all the other congregations are trying to accomplish, is we want to not only reach the lost souls on the University of Wyoming, but while we have them for 4 or 5 years, we want to build up their spiritual foundation to the point that when they leave and when they graduate and they move off to get that job and they become part of that small congregation in whatever town and they're one of the youngest people, they're ready to step up and be a part of the congregation to serve, to lead, and to help the church continue to thrive. We want them to be much more spiritually mature by the time they leave college than maybe they would be had they not been able to come through the ministry.
And how does that work? I looked on your website, your Facebook page, and your Instagram, and the quote I saw on all three were, "We are here to explore, embrace, and emphasize the life of faith in Christ revealed in the Bible." So how would you say the Colossians 1 and that mission statement kind of coincide together?
Yeah. So if essentially we're trying to create Christ in them, we're looking at Christ, we're trying to understand how it is that he sees people, thinks about people, how he sees the commandments of God. And then once we understand that, we're trying to make these young people into that same likeness, complete in Christ, fully developed as much as we can in that amount of time.
So in that pursuit, I guess that would go back to one of our earlier questions. You know, how do you push someone to be a leader? Obviously, you know, you can only mm-hmm. do so much pushing. They have to be willing to grow into that yeah. role. But, you know, in so many cases, apathy is the rule as opposed to the exception. You know, it's typical for someone to grow up in the church and then they learn, you know, and they go to college and all of a sudden they're just not there anymore. And so how would you say you would approach someone who has grown up in that situation? You know, they've fallen into apathy. I mean, is that person your focus to try and push them into being a leader, or do you have to wait for them to kind of come around and become more involved themselves?
It depends. It's sort of an interesting dynamic. A lot of times when I'm trying to feel someone out, I know they've grown up maybe and been part of a very sound congregation. They have good Christian parents, and there's sort of a disconnect. They don't seem very involved themselves. I'll really focus on them pretty hard right off the bat, trying to just see how they'll respond. Sometimes they'll be like, you know what, I know. Mom and Dad haven't been here, and I've just been kind of letting it slide. That's a great situation. You know, then they realize, you know what, I'm being held accountable. I really need to wake up and make this a priority. That's great. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work out that way. And you find in any congregation, you encourage, and they're just kind of sitting there like a bump on the log. It's just not sinking through. And so, no, they're not my priority. What I'm going to do is I'm going to find people who are truth seekers, who are interested in growing. I'm going to focus my energy on them. And they're not the people who grew up in a strong Christian home. They're not the people that you would say, oh, they're the most talented. They have all this potential. I want the people who want to grow regardless of how the world would see them. An interesting thing will sometimes happen is that you'll create a culture within the young people in the church where this person who should be stepping up sees they're now on the outside. Everyone else is really growing. And sometimes that positive peer pressure will help motivate them to realize, you know what, I need to be a part of this as well.
Yeah.
And then other times, you know, you can lead a horse to water and
yeah.
they got to do the rest.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's something that we even see in the book of Acts specifically, is that passion is many times contagious,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's, if I see someone and they're just passionate and they're locked in, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And, It doesn't matter if anyone else likes it. You know, this is what's right, and this is what I'm going to pursue. You know, in that situation, it seems like that person, even if they've not grown up in the church, they can many times be the instigating factor that gets other people involved. And that's interesting to me, that the gospel is so powerful that it brings us together, and those who are passionate about it many times can bring in the people on the fringes.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's what's encouraging to see.
Yeah. So going back to the idea of campus ministries, why would you say campus ministries are so important?
Yeah, I think campus ministries are very vital to consider for a lot of reasons. The biggest one is I personally am convinced that there is no better time in a person's life to focus on presenting the gospel to a specific age group than when people are in college. Too much younger than that, and you know what? I'm just kind of doing what mom and dad and grandma and grandpa have always wanted me to do, and I really don't know anything. My brain isn't even fully developed yet, and you know how hard it is to talk to 17-year-olds about serious things. And then too much older than that, okay, now I'm settling down. I'm starting to have kids. I've worked so hard. I have this dream career, and I'm working 60, 70-hour weeks. I'm trying to buy my first house, and now I want my second car, and now I'm thinking about retirement. Now I'm thinking about – and so obviously you preach to people at all stages in life. But when they first go to college, now nobody can tell them what to do, hypothetically. Now they don't have to follow their parents' rules. Now they can explore religious ideologies, political ideologies, any sort of worldview that they want to, and create who they want to be for the rest of their lives. And so they're thinking about deep philosophical questions. Now they're on their own, and it's tough, and they have to pay for things, and they're experiencing emotions they've never felt before, and they have all these problems. At that point in time, I feel like most people are more open to hearing something new than maybe at any other time in their life, at least as a general population. And so I think that's really a prime time. And then another reason is you have tens of thousands, depending on the size of your university, of people in this same age group and situation in life where they're all much more open to hearing new ideas. And I think maybe we don't always focus on that opportunity with this many lost souls in this specific demographic.
I think another factor that would probably go into your first example would also be that, you know, they're not married, they don't have kids.
Yes.
Because probably one of the strongest pulls or pushes that we have towards a relationship with God is going to be our spouse.
Yeah.
You know, if we catch them before they form that relationship, then I think it would be easier, at least in my mind. It sounds like it would be easier, you know.
Well, part of my job, it seems like lately, has been trying to talk people out of marrying this person.
Right.
Maybe that's leading them in the wrong direction. But, you know, another thing that I was just thinking of as you were saying that is, man, try to set up a Bible study with someone who has three kids and works, you know, all these odd hours, and maybe it's different than your schedule. It's hard to schedule those sorts of things, and the weekends are family time. Well, college kids, I'll say, hey, you want to study at 9:45 tomorrow? Well, can we do 11:32 the next day? They can study whenever, basically. They only have a couple classes per day, and so you have lots of opportunity to get together with them.
Yeah. And it seems like you're a large proponent, not just of Christians going out and being what they need to be, but something a little bit more concrete, more official, more tangible, whenever we're talking about campus ministries. Could you explain why the official nature of the campus ministry is more beneficial rather than just someone saying, well, our youth group is going out and they're behaving the way that Christians should?
Yeah. I think we all need a little bit more direction than that.
Okay.
For people to understand what it means to behave the way a Christian should, I think requires a lot of maturity. And sometimes people have the idea, okay, to live the way a Christian should means I don't cuss, and I make sure that I'm not going to the bar, and I'm not smoking, and, you know, I'm not doing the bad things, and I just generally treat people nicely. Well, those are all good things that we should do, but Christ was more than a nice guy. He was a nice guy in certain contexts, but he was someone who created situations where people had to think, and sometimes it was confrontational. It was always confrontational, but sometimes it was, you know, sort of in your face. Sometimes it was just asking questions people would never dare think of. And going out and being Christians is good, but what we want to help people see is, okay, there's a difference between not doing the big sins that the Bible talks about, and what does it actually mean to think like Jesus in this situation? Because Jesus is going to do something very profound. And once people start to see themselves as dead to self and alive to Christ, that really changes the way they look at their Christianity.
Yeah, so I guess we could say maybe a more organized approach, not just something that's maybe accidental, but something that's much more intentional might be the word.
I think if you're in any sort of leadership capacity, whatever leadership role you can think of, you have to be intentional.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a good parent, you have to be purposeful. It's not going to happen by accident. If you want to be a good husband or wife, it has to be purposeful. If you want to help people grow in the church, it has to be purposeful. And so we take a lot of time and energy into thinking, okay, what classes am I going to be teaching this semester? What activities are we going to be providing for the students, and in what order, and what are some of the things that we're going to have to think about and troubleshoot? How am I going to approach this particular one-on-one Bible study, and what is my goal in my head that I want to get them to, even if they don't know that yet? And so if you want people to reach an intended result, you have to have a specific plan to get them there, I think.
Right. Yeah. Along that same vein, what would you say your day-to-day, you know, routine looks like in the student center? I mean, you know, like classes or devotionals or, you know, periods of singing or prayer, or I mean, what does it look like just on your average day of class?
Okay. So every day looks different. I kind of wish it was the same, but it's different every single day. As far as we think of group student center Bible classes, I'll do between 3 and 4 of those a week.
Okay.
Where we get together as a group. The big ones that we'll do every week, we'll have our Sunday morning class, and of course that'll be at the building with the rest of the congregation, but in the college room. Every Tuesday, we'll have a big group Bible study, and that's our big one for the week. That's the one everyone invites their non-Christian friends to. We have dessert afterwards, and the students mingle, and we set up personal studies.
Oh, that's great.
And then, of course, we have our regular Wednesday class with the congregation. And then every Thursday, we have a meal that we feed the students lunch with. We also have another Bible study there. And then sometimes there will be others throughout the week. So those I always look forward to on those specific days. Interspersed between those and in between me writing sermons to preach and Bible classes to teach, I focus most of my energy on my personal one-on-one Bible studies. And it depends on the semester. Right before the coronavirus messed everything up, I was meeting with 24 students every week for our Bible study. And so that takes up most of my schedule.
You say 24 Bible studies a week?
24 Bible studies a week.
That's amazing.
Well, we were really blessed before all this. And we got a good group of students that want to just keep studying, which has been great. So I don't have much wiggle room.
Yeah.
We have the personal studies. I try to write bits of sermons in between, and then we got to plan student center events on top of that.
So that 24, is that people who come to the devotionals and they're interested? Is that people that you find personally? Is that people that, you know, the other students bring to you? I mean, like, is it a mixture of all three? Or
my ideal study is with someone who is worshiping with the congregation.
Yeah.
And they're participating in student center studies and events. And sometimes that happens. And then we get people who will refuse to worship with the congregation because they already have a place they like to go. But maybe they'll come to a student center Bible study, and then we have our personal study. And so we have to work that out. Then we have people who refuse to participate in anything with the student center, but they'll come into a personal Bible study. And so it's really weird, and we have to address those problems the further we get in our personal study. But I'll take anyone, I guess.
So in that situation where you have someone who's not interested in being affiliated with the Student Center, how do you find those people? I mean, like, do you find them personally, like outside of the Student Center? And if so, like, what does that look like?
Sometimes I will find them.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, the best evangelists I have are the students.
Yeah.
And they will talk with their classmates and their friends who sometimes maybe have even heard about the Student Center because they go to this church in town that has heard these things. And that happens quite regularly. And so they're very antagonistic about it. But one of the students will say something like, well, why don't you just meet them? Why don't we just sit down and study and you could see that, you know, we're not teaching anything crazy. And a lot of the studies start out that way. The study keeps getting better. They start to see, you know, we're just working through the scriptures. And they'll start coming to the group studies. They'll start coming to worship. And usually that's how we try to get that to go. I'll meet some students. I try to be active in the community in different things. And so every time I meet a college student, I'm always trying to get them into a study. But a lot of the studies come from the students themselves because they're getting it. They see the importance of the mission.
Yeah. And if I could pull you in really quickly, we have a couple of the students here tonight from Wyoming. You know, as a college student, as someone who's sitting in on classes, how do you take the conversation from, you know, maybe about our classes, maybe about what we're doing after classes, you know, fill in the blank. How do you shift the conversation to, you know, let's talk about the Bible? I mean, like, do you just mention a Bible verse that you read that you thought was interesting? Do you wait for someone else to bring it up? I mean, how does that go?
Yeah. Sometimes it's kind of tricky depending on, I mean, obviously your personality and who you're talking to.
Right.
But I think for me, at least, a lot of times with the Student Center, we're always doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really easy to, like, hey, you know, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm involved with this organization called the Christian Student Center. We're having some sort of fun activity. Typically there's food involved. You should totally come and check us out. And
the way to every college student's heart, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think using all these different activities that, you know, same-hearted people are, you know, involved with, I think it can be really beneficial for pretty much anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I love that I've never even thought of before is that, you know, it seems like y'all have different events geared for different groups. You know, you have a Bible study specifically for people to bring their friends to. You know, I think that's so awesome because it's like, you know, this is going to be a very basic, you know, a very basic study. We're not talking about the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. We're talking about something very, very basic to try and bring these people to the gospel. I think that's an awesome opportunity because in that situation where, say, maybe I'm not comfortable talking to someone about the truth, I can say at the minimum, well, hey, we've got this cool Bible study. Maybe you'd like to come in and join. So,
yeah.
So yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And, you know, that problem is something that I'm still trying to figure out how to navigate. You know, it's like, how can I shift the conversation from, you know, physics and math to, you know, by the way, you know, have you read this Bible verse? Have you heard of this concept? You know, how can I bring up a spiritual idea? So yeah, that's awesome. Regarding campus ministries, what would you say some of the keys are to the success that you've had? You've obviously been successful. I mean, 24 Bible studies in a week is fantastic. You know, and obviously, I'm sure you even want to increase that number. But what are some of the keys to being successful in that ministry?
Oh man, we could have a whole radio show on this. Probably there are different ways people are going to think about a successful campus ministry. And there are lots of campus ministries out there affiliated with the Lord's Church. And some of them look different from others. And there are lots of denominational campus ministries at the University of Wyoming. There's more than a dozen. I can't remember specifically. And some of them are huge. I mean, there are over 100 students involved, which is a lot for the University of Wyoming. And, you know, there's activities and fun and games, high budgets, you know, big concerts, those kinds of things. And so if we wanted to, we could do that. But what a lot of campus ministries do is they sort of create a youth group for college students. And what I mean by that is this is a babysitter who organizes all of your events and creates these fun activities. We do all these fun activities. We make memories and we roast marshmallows. And then, you know, they graduate and they realize, oh, nobody in the church caters to us anymore. Activities are important. They're important for building relationships, and you have to have relationships. That's part of Christianity, and that's part of the church. I think if your emphasis is not on we need to cater every activity into promoting spiritual growth and putting Christ into action and using this as evangelism to help this non-Christian person encounter the gospel, your ministry is bound to fail.
Yeah.
And so I think if we don't go into it with that mindset, it's going to fail. I talk to the students sometimes. We'll say, okay, this week we're going to go on a hike and, you know, invite your friends to this. Well, I don't like hiking. You know, I like video games. Well, maybe I don't like hiking either. It's not about the hike. It's about these people who do like hiking, and they're your brothers and sisters, and this person who's lost, and that's someone we want to help get to heaven. And so if you can develop that set within the student body and they get the mission, that's what's going to make the work, and God will cause the growth.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's something else that's important is, you know, you do see these student ministries or maybe just youth groups at, you know, at congregations that they're not affiliated with a college, but it becomes more of, you know, well, on Monday nights we have pizza and on Tuesday nights, I mean, it's nothing but activities, and mm-hmm. there's no balance between we're trying to make these people stronger mm-hmm. or we're trying to lead these people to Christ in the first place. It's all about how can we entertain, you know, what mm-hmm. movies can we watch and, you know, go ride, drive go-karts. I mean, it's just, it seems that there's no balance in those situations, mm-hmm. but I love the fact that y'all are trying to find that balance. And, you know, has that been tricky, you know, as you've been growing in this, has your balance changed at all? Or
it's something I always have to reevaluate every semester. I think this is a good thing. I think I'll always sort of tend to lean towards the side of more Bible studies and less activities.
Right, yeah.
And so I'm trying to branch out to be more someone who's able to generate something that's going to create interest with people as far as just getting together and having fun. I think I'd rather err on the side that I'm erring on. But, you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel. This is the way that people who've been overseeing this work have been doing it for quite some time, and it's worked. It's proven to be effective, and so if it has been working out pretty well, I don't have a lot to change with that. But coming back to the idea of what will make this more successful, and this is one that I keep telling the students, I keep telling the church over and over, is we cannot create a separation between the Christian Student Center and the Laramie Church of Christ. And that's so easy. And it'll happen by accident if you're not paying attention to it. The students will see themselves as their own mini church. And this is the church. These are my Christian brothers and sisters. And then there's old people church over here is sort of what happens. And so if you're not regularly getting the older Christians actively involved in the lives of these college students and then pushing the college students, no, you need to get out of your comfort zone and go minister to these saints over here and sit together and spend time in each other's homes, then the ministry will be a failure no matter how many people you baptize. Yeah. Because the church is not the Christian Student Center.
Right.
The Student Center is a small part of the church.
That's right. Yeah. I remember as kids growing up at our home congregation, our preacher, and I didn't really understand the benefit of it then. In fact, I kind of resisted it a little bit, but something that we would do on Saturdays is we would go out and we would, you know, pick, you know, an older widow lady or an older widower in some cases. And we would go and we'd have a devotional in their house. You know, maybe they'd have some refreshments for us. Mm-hmm. And then we'd spend an hour or two, you know, mowing their lawn, replacing light bulbs, just kind of miscellaneous things around the house that they might need us to do. And, you know, again, at that point in my life, I really didn't see the value of it. It's like, oh, there's so many other things I could be doing with my Saturday. But looking back on it now, those are some of my favorite memories of things that we did, is that we were interacting with people who were not in our age group. And, you know, and something else that our preacher would do is he would always ask them, you know, what wisdom do you have for for these kids, you know, what do you wish that you knew that, you know, maybe they don't know at their age? And it was just, it was such a benefit. So yeah, just finding that balance also between we can't become our own entity. We're still involved. We're still an integral part of the congregation. That's awesome. That's awesome. What would you say another key to success is?
As far as making the ministry work, I think another key to success is, and this is true in the church, people say, okay, that's the evangelist, and they create a clergy-laity system. And so what I want to make, and I encourage my students to do, is I want to say, okay, I'm the evangelist, I'm an evangelist, but so are you. And I want to get you to the point where you don't need me. That's my goal. I'm dispensable. I'm not going to be here forever. You're only going to be in my life for a couple of years. And so if you can get everyone on the same page as to we are here to save souls, this is why the Christian Student Center exists. There are all kinds of fun things as well, and there's great friends and memories. But if we're all in this to save souls, and I am an important part of that, not only do people feel like they're part of something bigger and they're important in the kingdom, which they are, but God's work is actually getting done that way. And so I think that's very important, to not let me be the guy. And I want everyone else to be that person, that man, that woman who's spreading the gospel.
Right. Let me ask you another question. Say a congregation is interested in getting a campus ministry started. You know, they want to start laying that foundation. Maybe there's no foundation, and, you know, we're starting from ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? You know, how do you start something like that?
Yeah, I think there are lots of opportunities for lots of congregations to do this, but I think they should really take their time and do it the right way. A lot of people ask me, how do we get one started? So can I just go and get a permission slip from the college? And it's really not that simple. There are a lot of things to take into account. You have to understand something about college kids, for one. And so try to figure out who these creatures are. They can be lazy sometimes, like all people. And so if you're going to be trying to offer activities and Bible studies, you're going to have to bend over backwards to make it convenient for them, because if you don't, there are 20 other campus ministries that will make it much more convenient for them. We're fortunate because we have a facility very close to the campus. And so that may not be realistic for a lot of people with the price of real estate. But one key, and this is going to be a requirement in a lot of colleges, you have to understand the bylaws to have what's called a recognized student organization, an RSO. And so you have to figure out what's required for an RSO status. And in a lot of cases, you have to have at least two or more current students at the University of Wyoming who are part of your RSO. On top of that, you have to have a faculty advisor, someone within the faculty at the university who's going to endorse your RSO and sign off on it and say they're looking after it. Well, that's going to be hard if you don't have the right connections with a brother or sister who works for the university. So that's another barrier.
Mm-hmm.
You will also have to figure out what access do we have to the facilities. If we can't own a building next to campus like we do, what you can do is often allow the students to rent and reserve rooms on campus, which is going to be kind of the next best thing for that. You also want to make sure that you have a mission and vision in mind before you get this started. You're not just going to go start converting college students. You better have a specific game plan that you're going to implement and realize it's going to take a little while in order to get this thing really up and running. You're going to need people who are going to be available during the workday, which is very difficult because everyone's going to be at work. But these college students are only going to want to study during the day. They don't want to study in the night at night because they're doing homework or they're out having fun or whatnot. They don't want to study on the weekends. They want to study at 11 o'clock on a Monday morning. So you have to realize you got to have people willing and able to be flexible with their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you can do. I would recommend getting in touch with people who've been doing it for some time. Find out, hey, what's your day-to-day look like? How did you take care of this problem and this problem and this problem? And then making sure that the entire congregation is bought in and committed to this mission field. Because if they're not bought in, it's not going to happen, like with any ministry.
Right. Let me ask you one more question. We've got around 10 minutes to go. Give us one or two of your favorite success stories, you know, those stories that you just feel like really encapsulates the Christian Student Center. And you can bring in one of the students if you like to. So.
Well, maybe I'll let Max do this because, you know, on this trip we've been talking to a lot of people who are partners in this work. And so I brought four students with me. I brought Jake and Chantel, this amazing couple that are some of our rock stars. I mean, they are very mature, very spiritually minded. They help in so many different ways. And I also brought a younger couple. They're getting married on June 27th. I'm doing the wedding. So
congratulations.
Got to make
one
sure
month
I
away.
Get that right. Max and Jenny, who are also this fantastic young couple. And Max and Jenny, getting that Bible study set up in the first place and then actually doing that Bible study was pretty interesting. I don't know. Do you want to tell the story or?
Yeah. So Jenny comes from a different background, still kind of religious, but not Christian. And so obviously, you know, we're both pretty stubborn, so we're going to be butting heads a lot. And so, hey, come to the student center. You know, we got these fun activities, great people, free food, you know, hard to not go. And so eventually we get with Jess and, you know, it slowly starts like, yeah, you know, we're building this relationship with each other. And then all of a sudden, Jess comes out with this topic that was a little hard for Jenny to accept. And it kind of blew my mind that he would just come out and say that. But, I mean, obviously, you know, it's part of his job. He's got to do that to save some souls. And so we're kind of working through it. We're working through it. And eventually, we come to the topic of baptism. And we're digging through that and, you know, we start asking more questions, and then it's just kind of like it clicked. And Jenny was converted almost a little more than a year ago, and I was obviously super happy that my soon-to-be fiance was a new Christian. And boy, was she was pretty zealous, and she just took off like a rocket, bringing people in off the street, setting up, I don't know how many Bible studies.
At least three that I can think of.
Yeah, three Bible studies. And, you know, I should have known this, but someone told me that, you know, once she converts, she's gonna take off. And, you know, oh, surely not. Like, you know, I'll be able to keep pace with her. But holy smokes, she is absolutely on fire. And it's just, I don't know, it's baffling almost just to see her work with other people doing that whole evangelism. And man, it was just very exciting to kind of watch this new birth take place. And man, I am so grateful that, you know, she finally accepted and Jess was here to walk us through it and kind of build our relationship closer to each other.
Yeah, and you know what a great foundation for, you know, a marriage. Now that you're on the same page, you know, you're moving towards the same goal, and you know, life is good. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
So
she's listening.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Do you have another success story that, you know, you just feel like really encapsulates the student center?
Well, it's interesting. It's one similar to Max and Jenny, you know. One person will be converted, and then you'll see someone who's maybe been a Christian longer, and all of a sudden it's reignited their fire. And you get to see that, like with Max and Jenny, but one of my preaching interns, Cole Ingram, he was converted, oh, maybe 6 months after I started, I want to say back in early 2018. And his wife, they got married out of high school, grew up in a Christian home. But, you know, she was not strong. Her family's not strong. It was kind of a tradition to be a part of the church, and she didn't really know much. Cole started asking some deeper questions. He had studied to the point, you know, okay, I want to become a Christian. I want to be baptized, and I want to start learning this stuff. And so that brought him and his wife into my office week after week, usually twice a week. I've got this question, and now this relative saying this, and I have this question and this question. And not only is it exciting to see Cole, who knew absolutely nothing about the Bible, saying, I want to preach, I want to share the gospel, I want to learn about Revelation 20, and all of these different random things. Well, now his wife is starting to do that, and she's very quiet and very meek, but she's starting to come out of her shell. Fast forward, you know, then they start having children and are getting ready to graduate and start making tough life decisions. Where are we going to move? And they get pressure from non-Christian family to pursue maybe this job in this town, knowing full well there are no sound congregations there. And had the last couple years not gone the way it did, they would have moved off where there's no church, nobody to spiritually encourage them. And like we see all the time, you know, people slowly start to shrivel up and weaken and ultimately die spiritually. Well, we're seeing this with lots of the students. Even those who grew up in strong Christian homes, or what we thought were strong Christian homes, they're getting ready to make these very tough decisions that you'll see people in the church who've been Christians 20 or 30 years are not even thinking about. And so, I mean, I could give you example after example, but those are some of the more recent ones that sort of come to mind. But this is, young people will impress you. The students say that I'm old, but I'm really not. A lot of times the younger generations criticize the older generations. And the older generations, of course, criticize the younger generations. But if you get to know some of these students and get to hear the things that come out of their mouths and see the things that they're willing to do, be hopeful. The church can and will be in very good hands in the generations to come if we will embrace mentoring them up. And that's what we're trying to do in Laramie.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more question. We've got right around 3 minutes, and we'll start wrapping up. You know, if you do have a student who's struggling with some apathy, you know, they've grown up in the church, but it's just not something that they're passionate about. Mm. But they want that passion. You know, they want to get to that point where they're just really locked in, but they're struggling to get to that point. What would you say to that person?
Mm. Well, okay, we got, what, 3 minutes? Well, okay.
Kind of a big question. Here's the way for 3 minutes.
Here's the way it's typically framed to me. Jess, I'm not feeling very spiritual. I don't feel as spiritual as I did last year at Bible camp or whatever it might be. You know, I'm feeling spiritually weak. Well, okay. So start doing spiritual things and then you'll start feeling spiritual. Well, what does spiritual mean? It's not, well, my heart's on fire to do this hard thing necessarily, and that's good. But spirituality is not always feeling good. Sometimes it's feeling terrible. Sometimes the most spiritual thing to do is to go to Mount Carmel and preach against all these prophets of Baal and then have the queen try to, you know, cut your head off. Well, Elijah's not feeling very great, and he was very spiritually minded in at least pursuing those things up until that time. Moses leading the people was constantly frustrated and everyone complained, and he's as spiritual as they come. And so a lot of times, and I think, okay, let's use the marriage analogy. I just don't feel that in love with my wife. Well, go start loving your wife.
Yeah.
And when you start doing what God says, the feelings and the passion will naturally reignite. And when you start trying to be the kind of man or woman God wants you to be, even when you don't feel great and you're feeling apathetic, you're feeling lonely or depressed, most of the time you'll work through that low valley and then you'll have those high points again.
Yeah.
But you just do what you got to do. And I don't like the expression fake it until you make it because you're not faking anything.
Right. Yeah.
But you're just being the man or woman God called you to be.
Well, it's been a pleasure. We're so thankful that you stopped by in San Angelo to say hello, and we're grateful for the work that you do.
Yeah,
and we know that it's not easy work, but we know that it's rewarding, especially in the long term. So thank you all for coming and being with us.
Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, well, thank you for tuning in. If you've been listening over the radio or via the internet, We're grateful you've tuned in and hope that you've found our study encouraging. So thank you very much.